Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:09 p.m. and that is Central Time, and today is March 30th. Gold took a leg down today. It was down $29 and closed below 1700. So this is a pickup in the pace of the downtrend, and certainly it's certainly raising questions about what exactly is going on here. Well, I guess one factor is that there is more of a growth bias in terms of the rising yields, and also that there is less demand for safe havens, and that is at least partially true. I don't think there's anyone particularly paying much attention to the fact right now that governments are flagrantly signaling that they're going to devalue their currencies, that there is no real plan to pay back the debts that were brought up and accrued over 2020, and that eventually that is going to represent a clear monetization of the debt. Against that background, one would expect gold to do better, but it is not doing better because there is this perception that we're not going to have negative real yields indefinitely because of this rise in government bond yields. That one of the primary reasons why gold had done so well in the run-up to that peak in August, I'm going to reload this chart to see if it will put the dates in at the bottom. That's rather unusual that it hasn't done that. But one thing that we can certainly think about is that when we think about negative real yields, obviously it's about the prevailing interest rate and inflation. So with yields now trending higher, the question, of course, has to be how high will they go? And we certainly saw that there was some resistance around the 180 level in here today. So that's, I think, a meaningful change. It is potentially signaling that we're going to have at least some demand come back in for yields. There's a widespread perception right now that yields will trend higher in an unabated fashion indefinitely, that investors are willing to give the benefit of the doubt to global reflation, and that it necessarily means that yields should be higher because of that growth. And additionally, that inflation will be kept under control. Of course, that is, in many respects, pricing in the best of all possible worlds, that we can print as much money as is required indefinitely, that bond yields can continue to rise with absolutely no repercussions, and that global growth will return in flourishing fashion, with no bumps along the way. Well, it just doesn't it sounds like wonderful news, but it just doesn't seem to be credible. And I bought some treasury bonds in here, our futures in here today, because I just think that when we look at the yield at 1.7% and almost at 1.8% earlier on today, that it's looking attractive. And it's particularly looking attractive because the dollar is rebounding. There's a clear determination by investors to trade around the outlook for vaccines and the coronavirus. So we're certainly seeing that the dollar has now more than rebounded. It is back above its trend mean. I remain very much of the view that the USA does not want a strong currency, and that we are eventually going to see some form of intervention to arrest this advance in yields. But with the dollar appreciating and yields at 1.8%, then there is certainly some motivation by bond investors to buy the dip and to capture that yield in an appreciating currency. So I think that we are potentially now at a point where this significant pullback in bond yields is due a process of mean reversion. And that should be positive for gold too. Gold and bonds peaked at the same time in August. And gold was certainly weaker in here today, and it closed on its low. Bond prices did not close on their low. They were well off the low. And we could get at least a rebound to test the short-term sequence of lower rally highs. We may see more than that. But certainly when we see an acceleration of a trend followed by a loss of momentum and failed downside breaks, then it does hold out the prospect of the scope for a more significant and sharper rally. And that could quite easily turn into a type 2 bottom with a massive reaction against the prevailing trend and a push back up into that area around the 137 level. And then we could ask the question about how sustainable is that contraction in yields. But there's been a lot of very good news priced in. Now let's think about what's happening in terms of these rising numbers of cases and particularly in Europe. The euro continues to come back down. Investors are looking at what's going on in Europe, the slow pace of the rollout of vaccines, the fact that despite this scare around the AstraZeneca shot is certainly that it is efficacious, and they've been rolling it out in the UK with no big problems. And yet Germany today has said that they're only going to allow it for people over the age of 65. And then we can think about the fact that the numbers are rising, that they may have to lock down again, that the number of cases in the eastern portion of the USA are also rising. The UK variant is spreading, and it's likely to be by far the most dominant of the variants. And I think that was quite obvious from back in January, that when something becomes more virulent and easier to spread, then it will do so, and it will completely overshadow the original version of the virus. So that's exactly what we're having. So it's quite likely that there will be episodes of higher cases rising. But of course, then we are going to see just how well the vaccines that are currently in place will be in curtailing that spread. And that is favoring the dollar right now. It doesn't necessarily mean that the dollar is sustainably on an upward trend, but investors are willing to bet that US growth will be stronger than European growth, and indeed that Japan will be a little behind the curve as well. There won't be any foreigners allowed in for the Olympics this year. They have a large elderly population. They're going to have to vaccinate before they can reopen their borders. And obviously that represents a time-consuming challenge. So the yen is now pressuring its downtrend. It continues to push up and out of this range. Now, one thing that we've certainly seen over the last decade is that when the yen has devalued, it has been positive for the Nikkei in nominal terms. When the euro has devalued, it has been positive for the European sector, but most particularly with the potential for inflation to start coming back and higher yields, it's positive for the banking sector. What I found particularly interesting is that the SX7E was in positive territory today. That's the Euro stocks. If we look at the SX7P, which is the Europe stocks banks index, then it was also in positive territory. So that would suggest that the contagion from the collapse of the arch egos, and I'm not entirely sure how that should be pronounced, but it does rather roll off the tongue in two separate words, arch and ego. Certainly that the appetite for leverage at that particular family office or hedge fundy kind of family office was rather excessive, and it has caused certainly big issues for some of the slower to act investment banks that had been extending credit. Credit Suisse was down again in here today. But it does suggest that some of the more nimble banks were in positive territory, and that the exposure to this particular episode was has been reasonably contained to a small number of banks. When we then think about the performance of some of the shares that were most acutely affected, well, Discovery, for example, has at least paused. And it's rebounding from the region of the trend mean. We've had very swift reversions to the mean. What it also helps to highlight is that there are starting to be cracks in the global environment. There were a lot of people who tried to make as much money as possible from the pandemic, and they got long and levered and rode momentum strategies all the way through until earlier this month. And now they're starting to come undone because as bond yields rise, then they start to make leverage trades more expensive. And that means that greater margin has to be demanded. And then, of course, when your positions go against you, those margin calls multiply. So we've had an example of that this week. One thing, though, that it is obviously getting people to think about what happened in 2007. And one thing that I think is worth considering, let me see if I can change this and perhaps get the dates back on the bottom of these charts. It's rather interesting that we're getting this. This bug in Bloomberg's charts that it's not putting the dates in. But the high yield spread is still on its lows. And if we go back and look at a decade ago, then we can perhaps even look a little bit further back. I can't even pull that back here. So we can see that bond yield spread. High yield spreads were trending higher well in advance of the problems in 2008. So it's going the opposite direction right now. High yield spreads were at a new low in here today. So there isn't any real pressure on the funding side. Even when we think about companies that are at extraordinary valuations, it's worth considering that Airbnb, for example, has approximately 6 billion in cash and equivalents. So they made money, apparently, that positive free cash flow in 2017 and 18, and then took a big loss in 2020, and expect to make almost $1 billion in profits this year. But at the same time, it is valued at a market cap of 111 billion. So that's a rather profound valuation. With a lot of these new companies, they have got, or they don't have these metrics that we would normally look at, like P/E ratios or dividend yields and price to sales ratios. But Airbnb is trading at a book value of nearly 40, but that's rather irrelevant for a company that doesn't really have any physical assets. But the big question, of course, is it going to take on some of these other bigger companies? When we look at, for example, Booking.com, it's got a very similar business model in that it is a broker and it trades on a PE of 60, so it didn't certainly escape the it didn't escape the ravages of 2020. But its book value is a half, and its price to sales ratio is aggressive, but not nearly as aggressive as some of the IPOs. We can then think about the chatter around Roblox and that it is a revolutionary new game. But the reality is that these games tend to come and go, and investing in the makers of the games of one-hit wonders is seldom a profitable exercise. The share has pretty much gone nowhere since its IPO. And that has been similar for a large number of these companies that have rushed into the market. I don't think, though, that there's a problem as of yet with these companies because they don't have to go to the market for funding. The kinds of challenges that they are, that I guess, that come to bear on these kinds of companies is simple enough. It's when they go to the market for additional funding and then find that they have to pay much higher interest rates for it, then that impedes their route to growth and to achieve their lofty valuations or justify them. But in between, when they actually have to go and ask for more money, then there's probably not a lot to talk about. And then, if we think about the risk that is outstanding in terms of these large numbers of companies that don't have positive earnings, well, it doesn't really matter until they have to go and ask for more money. So that would suggest that there is a runway for additional positive experiences for some of these companies, most particularly if we see additional rounds of quantitative easing and additional spending. The USA at the moment is beginning to talk about what a new infrastructure project will look like. So when we look at, for example, Nucor, then that is a share that has done spectacularly well. And now it looks really very overbought. So we've seen a lot of pricing in of the potential for a really impressive spending spree by the US government, upwards of $3 trillion in additional spending already priced into the steel sector. Into the aluminium sector, it's really looks like it's in the lower reaches of what the potential is for pricing in additional upside. But of course, steel is much more tied to infrastructure. And of course, with the Biden administration, it is quite likely that we're going to see a great deal more investment in renewable energy and renewable infrastructure. The solar ETF has bounced in here today from the region of the trend mean. Wind ETF is also steadying from the region of the trend mean. And then, of course, Tesla, which is synonymous with both, has also now it looks increasingly likely that this is a higher reaction low. That is an upside key reversal in here today. So if it gets upside follow through tomorrow, well, then I think we are probably coming towards the end of this process of mean reversion. We also saw in here today that Volkswagen has decided that they are definitely throwing their hat in the ring for the prize of being a pure electric vehicle manufacturer. They're going to change their name in the USA from Volkswagen to Volkswagen. And that is obviously a rather trite play on words, but the market liked it and the share was up really quite impressively. Generally, we do get a better chart from looking at the preference share on the longer term, and the price is now coming back into the regional highs from back in 2016. So this has been a very clear and really a profound breakout from this longer term range, and it suggests that the diesel cheating scandal is now in the rearview mirror, and that there is clear potential that Volkswagen is going to try and avoid the fate of other auto manufacturers, and that they had to fund Tesla's growth through selling their carbon emissions. I think the board of of Volkswagen are acutely aware of the political motivation behind the continued uptrend in emissions, and this remains a consistent uptrend. So they've made the determination that if you can't beat them, join them, and that if one is going to survive, then moving to the politically sponsored electric vehicle market is probably going to be the only way that they will survive. So That is a significant transition in terms of the management's perspective, and it is being rewarded. Of course, we can also think that the weakness of the euro is helping to reignite interest in European equities. The Europe 600 index is right in the region of the peaks from back in early 2020, and this is the upper side of a 20-year range. Then when we look at the FTSE 100, it is still below the 7,000 level, but 7,000 is unlikely to be anything other than a temporary hurdle over which it will eventually come, because this is an index loaded with global autonomies, and particularly those that have long histories of paying dividends. We're certainly seeing increasing interest, and it just occurs to me that perhaps if I change the window that I'm looking at, then perhaps I might get the dates on the bottom of the charts again. IBM is one of the big dividend and buyback champions of the tech sector, and it's now right in the region of the upper side of this base over the last year, and it's been trending downwards for 8 years. So there's the scope that if we are going to move back towards more of a value environment and and the search for yield moves towards the companies that pay dividends, then it's companies like IBM and Cisco will become more attractive to investors. Even though there are shares like Microsoft and Apple also have really admirable records of paying dividends, they have received a lot of love already from the investment population. And Microsoft is still consolidating. Apple is right in the region of its trend mean. These are incredibly large companies, and they represent significant weightings in the NASDAQ in particular. So their continued ability to hold the region of the trend mean is going to be rather significant in terms of the ability of the wider market to continue to hold on. And the NASDAQ was in pretty much just quiet in here today. And we're at this juncture right now about exactly where is the next round of additional stimulus going to come from. So it could potentially be the fiscal side with the Biden administration and their pioneering of an additional significant infrastructure spend, and just how successful they are in getting that through the various houses of Congress is still open to question. That there could also be the potential that Europe is going to continue to increase the quantity of money that they're willing to commit to buying bonds and trying to keep the European bond yields under control. There's also the potential that we're going to see other examples of stress coming through in the bond markets or in the trading markets with hedge funds blowing up, and that would necessitate additional supply of money being put into the money markets. So there are obviously issues that are starting to arise with this rising bond yield, and of course it also helps to emphasize just how acutely sensitive various momentum-oriented trading strategies are to bond yields and the cost of funding. So as bond yields go up, then the incentive is either going to be to try and ensure we don't get additional problems arising in among the trading community and with these acute bouts of single stock volatility. Alternatively, it could be that eventually we're going to see these yields posing a problem in terms of demand for funding, whether that is going to cause funding problems for governments or whether it is going to cause issues in the housing market because of rising mortgage rates. All of these are potential outcomes. And of course, then there is the real incentive of people that are pioneering this revolution in SPAC investing. When these things are sponsored by musicians, sports stars, then it's really about name and brand recognition rather than the fundamentals of the business that is being taken over. And this is just reflective of the fact that private equity investors, they were willing to allow successive funding rounds at higher and higher valuations for most of the last 15 years. And now with WeWork having failed and giving SoftBank a rap on the knuckles, then they've all decided that it's time to get out of private equity investing and to put all these companies on the block for sale. And if they're so eager to sell, well, there has to be a good reason for that. And they are worried that the availability of credit and very low interest rates are not going to last indefinitely. So eventually, this will cause an issue because increasing supply against a background of rising prices will eventually be capped off with rising yields. I do, however, think that we're not going to see rising yields immediately. It's much more likely we're going to see a reversion to the mean first, and subsequently more rising yields as people really do believe that we are moving more into an inflationary bias. I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.